You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Wednesday. I knew that. Yeah. Very good Wednesday morning to you. Mike McNamara into... You know what's weird? My friends don't call me Mike. Right? Hardly any of my friends call me Mike. I should say that. Right? My family members call me Michael. Okay? And all my other friends call me Mac. So I say Mike. I mean, if I said Michael Mac, good morning, Michael McNamara, right? It'd be weird, wouldn't it? Oh, really? So anyway, I don't know why that got into my head, but it did. So there you have it. good morning to you on a Wednesday. We're going to start the show quicker today because I have a bunch of stuff I want to do in the first hour. And it's based on things that I watched over the last 24 hours. And so I'm curious, you know, about being better informed about places like Iran and places, you know, and China. So I kind of look for programming, you know, that I can watch and stuff that's put up on YouTube to... from Iran, or stuff probably better said, stuff about Iran, you know, done by, you know, Al Jazeera or somebody. So it certainly is not an American perspective, okay? Absolutely not an American perspective. And so I enjoy that. I think... you know, when I taught my decision-making class, I said, hey, let me just tell you the skill that you have to learn here if you're going to do kind of an estimate of the situation about somebody who's going to fight you. You got to be able to turn the map around, look at it from their perspective, assume they're not stupid, that they want to go home and see their families tomorrow, you know, or whenever this thing ends. And if you had their mission, what would you be doing? How would you be doing it? What makes sense if you were them fighting us? And if you can't do that, then you're going to really struggle with this. So to me, it's part of, right, understanding your adversary. And now, luckily, because of the way the world's connected, you can, you know, you can watch those newscasts. So I want to share with you, well, three things. One is, I've played his audio before, but I'm a huge fan of Charles Payne. He's a guy on Fox Business. And you're going to hear about 4 minutes Charles Payne today talking about Davos and the president at Davos, blah, 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 blah. And then you're going to hear, the second thing you're going to hear is an interview done by the BBC with the woman who was just reelected as the president of Taiwan. Yeah. And her name is Tsai, T-S-A-I, Ing-wen. All right. So you're going to hear with her. And what I want you to listen to is it. And because people that listen to this program, I think, tend to be a little bit better informed, because we tend to kind of deep dive on topics that a lot of people don't and devote time to them. You've all, like me, have benefited, you know, by listening to Grant Newsham on a regular basis and him pulling back the curtain and him talking about, you know, the different things in Asia and how an Asian perspective, because he spends so much time there. And so, but what I want you to listen to is the bias in the questioning of the BBC interviewer. And honestly, it's stunning. And, you know, if you didn't know, right, if you didn't know, you would assume that at one point Taiwan was a Chinese possession. Now, I know you know this, but let me just say it. It has never been. And mainland Taiwan has no claim historically on Taiwan, Formosa, or whatever the hell you want to call it. None. Zero. Nunca nada. Okay, but I want you to listen to the questions the BBC interviewer asks. And then throughout the interview, it's this bias, like somehow or other, China or Taiwan is provoking China by being a free nation and saying, no, get out of here. And so it's really, an interesting interview. It's really an interesting, odd interview in that, you know, again, I think if one thing All Marine Radio tries to be about, it's the truth, right? Wherever it comes from. It's what I love about having my friends on and arguing with them, because we've been doing it for a long time. That's bullshit, right? Which is one of the things you hear, right, in our conversations all the time. So you hear, you know, that bias from the BBC reporter, you know, pushing back on Taiwan about angering China and, you know, and then I would say, you know, contributing to this false narrative that somehow or other China has some kind of claim over Taiwan. So you're going to hear that. I want you to hear that. And what I really want you to hear is not so much his questions, although I think they're, you know, the bias in them will be obvious to you. What I want you to hear is her answers as a president of a free people, right, that sits across the the Taiwan Straits, so from China. You'll hear that. And then the next thing that you'll hear is a report from Iran. It's pretty interesting, an Al Jazeera report on Iran. And it's pretty interesting because it talks about how initially, you know, the support for the government's retaliation against the United States turned into demonstrations against the government. And I watched it last night. Really interesting. And, you know, what the Iranian people are fed up with is just the failure of their government to perform. But on top of that, and what happened with the downing of the Ukrainian airliner was they just straight up lied to us. They had somebody who's been a news presenter on the Iranian news channel, right? A woman, she resigned. And then took to social media and apologized to the Iranian people for, you know, the work she's done. So pretty interesting stuff. So you're going to hear a little bit about that. So we're going to take a little trip around the world. We'll start on Wall Street with business. But before we do that, obviously, we got to commence this program appropriately. So with all of that said, the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning. I just watched Chuck Schumer, make some comments, okay? And I just have to say this. Chuck Schumer sucks as a public speaker. How do I know that? Because I get a glimpse of the top of his head and the hair transplant that he had every time the dude speaks in public, because he can't look at the audience and speak. He's constantly reading from something that somebody wrote for him. Now, is he that unfamiliar with the text because he didn't write it that he's got to fucking read it? He does a ton of public speaking. You think you could say, yeah, this bullet, this bullet, this bullet, right? Or would he fuck that up too bad? I mean, good. And you see it all the time because he's always on the floor of the Senate talking. And he's always reading. Good God, man. Somebody in the state of New York, right, teach Senator Schumer how to speak in public, for God's sakes. What a joke. And one more thing. You know, I'm watching headlines because I don't read a whole lot about the impeachment. And now it's that the Republicans, right, can have a fair process if they choose to have one. And that's the Democrats accusing them of being unfair. Wait a minute. What happened in the House? Wasn't that the Republican lament over the Democrats who wouldn't allow them to call witnesses, who wouldn't allow them to modify rules, who said that this was so time sensitive it had to happen this quickly and then sat on it for a month? So to me, that's the bullshit of this whole event, right? You have just this most political process that happened in the House, and then people having the absolute and utter gall to look in the Senate and say, we want you to do it differently, though. I mean, come on. It's such bullshit, right? And let me tell you, the President of the United States, right, is, you know, let me tell you, if there ever a guy who travels fast and loose enough to be impeached, it's Donald Trump, okay? Playing quid pro quo, right, is the oldest game in politics. Is that an impeachable offense, right? Is digging up dirt in politics, is that impeachable? Is linking the two, has that never been done in American political history? No, it's bullshit. And I know that because Charles Payne, who you'll hear in a few minutes, said, is going to say, and I disagree with him, towards the end of his remarks, you know, he talks about the president going around the world and continuing to do his job in terms of, you know, the American economy and whatnot. And then he made a point about Nixon. You know, Nixon's numbers suffered in the polls when he stopped doing the business of the United States. I disagree with that. As somebody who was alive, I was a teenager, I think, at the time, and who kind of watched every day. What killed Richard Nixon was story after story after story after story after story. They got closer and closer, and then inside, and then further closer, and then further closer. And once it was inside the White House, right? And then Deep Throat, and then all this stuff. And pretty soon, even the people that supported him knew he was a lying crook, right? Even the people that supported him knew he was a lying crook. It was an overwhelming body of evidence, right, that damned public opinion against Richard Nixon. Everybody's like, yeah, tricky dick. He got to go. He got to go. Okay? So this thing, in my opinion, right, when you play by one set of rules and then you stand up and, you know, you wring your hands and tell somebody else you want them to play by a different set of rules, it's the bullshit that we get every day out of Washington, D.C., right, elevated to a lower standard, if that makes any sense, which it does to me. So anyway, this is dedicated to all the politicians in Washington, D.C., who I fucking loathe, okay? Yeah, take that to the bank. And Jack Riley's in the body of this, okay? So I hope you listen to a true American hero, and I hope you're ashamed of the way you conduct yourselves in that fucking city to do the people's business of this country. I feel better now. Here you go.
We are proud. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Winning. Speaking of winning, Derek Jeter got elected to the Hall of Fame, right? Dude has 3,000 hits, what, 4 world championships, Mr. Everything, right? Think he got elected unanimously? No. No, 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 no. One asshole has to make a statement. Now, what makes me happy is that asshole is going to get treated like an asshole, which is what assholes deserve. Okay? Ask me how I know that. Because when I went to high school, right, as a punk teenager at Christian Brothers High School, when you acted like a punk, they treated you like a punk, which meant, you want to go down to the gym and put the gloves on, McNamara? No, brother, I don't. You sure? Because we can go do that. No, brother, I don't. All right, I'll give you like 2 seconds to apologize to everybody for being disrespectful. Brother, I'd like to apologize to you and everybody for being disrespectful, right? And it taught you, you know, taught you to be a good person, right? Yeah. I can't remember how many votes, right? Yeah. Everybody but one dude votes to put him in the Hall of Fame. Idiots. Absolute idiots. But anyway, what was interesting, though, is to hear some of the votes, right? Ted Williams, you know, he had like 100 writers vote against Ted Williams getting into the Hall of Fame. You want to know why? Because he treated them like shit. So they took it out on him. And so I saw yesterday, you know, all these different people and the votes. 100 people voted against Roberto Clemente. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah. That's what asshole sports writers are. Yeah, take it from me. I know. All right, we got to do shithole weather. And somebody sent me an email. Mac, you really hiked the shit out of your daughter on Monday? I said I did. I didn't mean to totally do that, but... and then it was like, did you take water? No. I didn't think we'd be gone for 3.5 hours. I thought it would only be a couple-hour hike. We hiked 8 miles, right, through the kind of Laguna Mountains from down by the Coast Highway up, changing elevation of 1,300 feet from where we started to where we got to the top of the hill. Colleen! Yeah, boom. So, yeah, how about that? My daughter. All right, shithole weather. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota. Pretty awesome winter day here in Grand Forks, East Grand Forks. Not going to complain. Current conditions, clear and 10 degrees above. Feels like 5 degrees because of 6-mile-an-hour winds out of the south-southeast. No gusts. Today's forecast, mostly sunny. Should be 23. Winds out of the southeast at 8. Occasional gusts to 14. No snow or blowing snow. Low overnight is 13 above. How about that? That's nice. Church Bridge, right? So if East Grand Forks is going to be warm, Church Bridge ought to be, right? When I say warm, it's like, yeah, we're in the teens today. Good morning, Mac from Church Bridge. Hope you have a glorious day. Current forecast, light fog, calm winds, and 12 degrees above zero. Humidity will be at 92% for the day. Hoar frost will settle in. I hope everybody knows. H-O-A-R frost. just so you know. It will settle on objects, and it will continue to grow. This afternoon, mostly cloudy. Winds will be calm and a high of 19 degrees above. And a nice picture of Bev's like driveway and the street all covered with snow. So, yeah, the pictures of... Hold on, I got to sneeze. Woo! All right. From Hickory, North Carolina. Expeditionary in Asheville, North Carolina today, where it's sunny and 27. 27 in the Carolinas, man. That's cold. 6 miles an hour winds. Looking for a high of 48 and an overnight low of 27. Yeah, there's an off-ramp. Black Mountain Montreat, M-O-N-T-R-E-A-T, exit 64, Highway 9 in North Carolina. Yeah, again, my... And then in parentheses, can you believe some jackass didn't vote for Jeter? I can't believe that. If you've ever met him, sports writers are the biggest bunch of... I was going to say douchebags, but that'd be disrespectful to every respectable douchebag out there. Okay? And but, I mean, they are. They write about shit other people do, and then they get snarky, and they've never done shit in their lives. Right? The little geeks who sit on the side, they're not out there fighting. They're just writing their bullshit column. Yeah, and they come in, food all over their shirt and shit, you know, and they don't know. And I used to watch this when they come in to ask my dad about the game, right? Well, don't you think that if you would have done this? Well, what my dad doesn't want to say is, yeah, that guy couldn't pitch, but I didn't want to say that before the game because we weren't making a fucking roster move, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, I decided not to do that. And then they write about how stupid you are. And you're just like, yeah. Anyway, yeah, sports writers. Fairly low on the food chain, okay? Just above the meerkat, but well below a coyote in terms of intelligence. Happy hump day, Mac, from Nancy in Pleasantville. Mostly sunny, 21 degrees right now. On the way to 29, down to 6 above overnight with light winds. Okay, and then a picture. It looks like a rainbow outside Nancy's window. So that's good. Rainbows are always good. The leprechauns will tell you that, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But I think that's the rambling musings from drunk Irish people that might have a collective IQ below sports writers. I'm not exactly sure, but they're not. The Irish are not known for like, oh, yeah, the Irish, such smart people, things you don't hear. Oh, Irish food. Let's go eat Irish tonight. You never hear that either. Right? And Ruthann sent me a cool picture of a railroad trestle going over the river. Yeah. Back where I used to live. From Big Dave in Vacaville. Good morning. Today's weather in beautiful Vacaville, California. Currently 43 degrees, foggy, windy. It's not windy. Winds 4 to 8 out of the northeast. Looking for a high of 62. And a picture of... I don't know what the hell that is. A parking lot. Dave, like, not trying very hard with the photo today. What the fuck's up with that, man? Yeah. Dave, get your shit together, man. Don't send me bullshit pictures, and then I got to turn my head sideways to look at him? Come on. All right. Now, what I want to do is I want to play Charles Payne, right? The president in Davos, no doubt trying to distract from impeachment news, which is the way you play the game, right? But this is Charles Payne this morning talking about the president and then the reaction of other leaders there to him, which is kind of interesting.
I think he did extraordinarily well. I got up at 3 o'clock this morning to watch some of the gatherings, and you know, he had one where one of the richest men in Africa stood up and said, not only do we admire you, but Africa is rooting for America. Then he had the president of FIFA, the World Cup, saying that it's their goal to create 1 million jobs in America when they bring the World Cup to North America. Then later on in the morning, the representative from the World Trade Organization admitted that there were flaws in the World Trade Organization and that they would like to address them. It was really absolutely remarkable to see these global leaders, whether they were billionaires or the top business leaders.
Now, the flaws in the World Trade Organization, the ones that China exploits constantly, whoa. That's big shit.
leaders in their countries, one after another, saying their commitment to come to America and to bring jobs to America.
The president was asked in this interview this morning with Maria Bartiromo about tariffs on cars in the EU. Here's how he responded.
Ultimately, it'll be very easy, because if we can't make a deal, we'll have to put a 25% tariff on the cars. And they have no choice. They really have no choice. And I say this not as a wise guy or anything else. They've treated us very badly. We've lost $150 billion over a period of many years. We've lost $150 billion with them a year in terms of deficits. They have to do
it. Now, listen, $150 billion a year over many years, okay? Now, what I want you to know about that is this. The Europeans, right? We pay for their defense. The American taxpayer does. And then they reward that by tariffing you out, your products here in the United States, out of the European market. Okay? That's how they reward you. And it's bullshit. And it's been bullshit for a long time. But you didn't see, you know, either of the Bush presidents, you didn't see Clinton, you didn't say, hey, you've got to treat our workers more fair. You wonder why all those jobs have gone overseas, right? Well, part of it is, you know, the tariffs. If you're going to make a car that's going to compete in Europe, it's got to come from someplace that has lower wages, because we got to pay a tariff to get the son of a bitch into Europe. And that, I mean, and again, how does that make sense for President of the United States? I don't get it, right? And let me just tell you, I mean, I'm not Donald Trump's biggest fan, but in terms of trade and economics, dude has it right.
It's the right thing to do.
How's that going over?
Well, you know, they don't want to use tariffs, but President Trump has already shown that he is more than willing to do it, and he's had success doing it. We do have a new U.S. MCH deal with China, Canada, and Mexico. We got a phase one with China. We got a deal with Japan. We got a deal with Korea. We just had Macron back down and saying, okay, you know, we won't go unilaterally and tax digital companies. We'll try to do something within the European Union. So it's an effective method. I mean, listen, we're the world's largest economy. It is so crazy that we've allowed ourselves to be abused to the degree that we have for so long. And by the way, if we don't use it now, if we wait too long, we won't have that leverage anymore. So I think ultimately the idea is that to have real free trade around the world, which would mean very minimal tariffs and punishment. But we've got to right the scales right now. And we're an amazing market for any of these companies, whether you're Mercedes-Benz or whoever. You know, but let us sell some trucks in your country, too. You know, make it okay so that, you know, maybe you, when you're walking down the streets of Berlin, you see a Ram or something like that.
There's something else going on, of course, as well, which is the president wants that split screen, right? He's in Davos and now headed home. But because, remember, when Bill Clinton was impeached and facing the trial, he said, I'm going to do the nation's business. I'm still pushing my policies. Is that working for this president?
It's absolutely working. You know, as of yesterday, there were 11 commercials in this country being aired that mentioned the impeachment. All were being run by Republicans. So I mean, they have seized on this. They've got the momentum. The polls are going their way. And I'll tell you something else about doing the people's business. You know, if you go back and you look at history with Nixon, he became unpopular, not because of the impeachment, but when the American public.
Yeah, Payne's wrong about this, okay? He became popular because of. Hold on. He became popular because of this little. I don't know if I have Nixon by himself. Do I have Nixon by himself?
I want to say this to the television audience. I made my mistakes. But in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got. I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Oops. You mean, did you earn the plumber's unit that went into Daniel Ellsberg's thing, trying to find, like, dirt on him so you could say the Pentagon Papers were a lie and Ellsberg was a crazy man? Did you earn, you know, E. Howard Hunt and the plumbers going into the Democratic National Headquarters? Did you earn that? So Payne's a little bit wrong here. So, but I like the guy still.
Thought he was too fixated on impeachment and wasn't doing his job. That's when his poll numbers went down.
Wrong.
So it's good to see that President Trump is out there fighting impeachment.
To a certain point yesterday, we were saying he was almost quiet, not taking questions after bilateral meetings. But then he had this last minute press conference this morning where he took a lot of questions. Finally, markets, if you can put the big board up. Inching ever so close to 30,000 now. The Dow up 111 this morning.
Okay, we're in the second week of earnings. A lot of numbers came out last night. For the most part, pretty good. United Airlines among them. Banks did very well last week. As long as the underlying fundamentals continue to improve, you can see the stock market continue to go higher.
All right. So that's Charles Payne this morning. Now, what I want to play for you is a little bit of from the BBC. And it is an interview with the president of Taiwan. Her name is Tsai Ing-wen. Yeah, she's the president. She just won. She doesn't call it a landslide, but she got, I want to say, 60% of the vote. That's pretty good, right? The opposition candidate got 38. Somebody else got 2. So this is the BBC report. And I want you to pay attention to the bias of the BBC reporter, like somehow or other, Taiwan is guilty of some transgression because they won't play the emperor's new fucking clothes with China. Okay? And it's honestly, for the BBC, right, who makes its living because it's free, right, to kind of have this, you're tweaking China because you want to be free, is, I watched it, kind of stunning. But anyway, here it is.
Once written off by the opinion polls, but re-elected by a landslide.
You know,
President Donald Trump was just impeached.
Oh my God! The YouTube, right? Hold on, here she is again.
The fortune is largely put down to one thing. The growing fear of China, with the events in Hong Kong giving renewed urgency to her message that Taiwan's unique identity and democratic freedoms are best preserved by standing up to the powerful neighbor that claims the island as its own.
Hello, President Tsai.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
But might her strategy, as her critics claim, hurt the economy and risk provoking Beijing?
If we leave aside the question of timetable.
This guy's name is John Sudworth, right? He's the Brit dude interviewing her. Might their insisting on remaining free people provoke China? What the fuck?
The question of practicality. Are you, in principle at least, in favor of the idea of formal Taiwanese independence?
The reality and what it is now is that we are already a functionally independent country. And we have our own government and we have our own election.
Will there come a day when that reality needs to be spelled out by a formal declaration of independence?
The idea is that we don't have a need to declare ourselves an independent state, but we are.
So, do you hear the question? Mainland China has no claim. Will there be a declaration of independence? From what, you dumb shit?
An independent country as already, and we call ourselves Republic of China, Taiwan, and we have our own system of running the country, and we do have government, and we have the military, and we have elections.
Your victory is largely put down to the central position of China in the campaign. Some people would say China has always been a threat in the background. Why was it so different this time round?
Because over the last more than 3 years, we're seeing that China has been intensifying its threat. And they have all sorts of actions, military exercises, and they have their military vessels or aircraft cruising around the island. And also, with the things happening in Hong Kong, people get a real sense that this threat is real and it's getting more and more serious.
You've no doubt that under the one country, two systems formula, Hong Kong's freedoms are being eroded.
Yes, I think so. I mean, there was a time in the past that the people here are very envious, were very envious of the Hong Kong people because they have this amount of freedom under the British rule. But after 1997, things have changed a lot.
Your predecessor, Ma Ying-jeou, was able to preserve Taiwanese democracy whilst building stronger ties with China, economically and culturally. At a small price, the continued ambiguity over the status of this island, what's not to like about that approach?
But the situation has changed. The ambiguity can no longer serve the purposes.
Do you see the questioning? He's putting her on the defensive, right, as if China is just this benign country that wants to be friends. It's just like, I mean, I don't know if this is how you like get ratings or some shit, but honestly, it's almost insulting.
It was intended to serve. So we're facing a very different situation now. And the type of ambiguity that the previous governments wanted to use to preserve some sort of space for both sides is no longer there.
There's also been talk by your party about the dangers of Chinese influence. Doesn't your landslide victory, though, suggest that those claims were overblown?
Well, I don't call it a landslide victory. It's a convincing one, but not to the extent of landslide. We learned our lesson from the last election, which is a local election, and in that election, fake news, bad rumors, and a lot of other things that are influencing the people's perception here. And as a result, we suffered a lot from that election. So after
and you've no doubt that's coming from China.
Grant Newsham talked about this, right? That the previous local election was heavily influenced by disinformation, right, which obviously came from China. And so, again, I just, the whole line of questioning that you hear, right, is that somehow or other Taiwan should be apologetic for insisting on their free, you know, nature as a nation, right? And like some, like, we're not the ones provoking this, but that seemed to be the narrative of the interview, which to me was astounding.
Yes, to a large extent, yes. We have amended quite a number of laws to hold people accountable if they, you know, are distributing this fake news or manufacturing this fake news.
Critics are worried that in itself could be used as an attack on free speech.
Yes, and we do it very carefully so that we keep the right balance.
So just to sum up in terms of where we are with China, something's changed in your view. You don't buy the idea that reverting to the old compromise, that being more ambiguous about Taiwan's status could take us back to a golden era in which the political differences could be kind of shelved and the two sides could get on with just getting rich together.
No, the situation is very different, but I do.
Yeah, like, dude, I wish you would look at him and say, dude, get your head out of your ass. Is that what you think this is about? If so, or do you really work for the BBC, or are you like that Leonardo DiCaprio dude who just, like, you know, plays all these people and goes around the world? Are you really a reporter? Do you have any knowledge of this? It's crazy. Crazy talk.
Both sides have to think more seriously about the future so that we can coexist for some time and maintain the peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait.
Talk to me a little bit about your election victory. some people suggesting that it's not just the bigger questions of the immediate strategic challenge from China, but something is changing in Taiwan, particularly the younger generation.
I think the younger generation, or the young generation, are pretty used to the idea that we're separate. We have a separate identity and we're a country of our own. And if there's anything that runs counter to this idea, they would stand up and say that's not acceptable to us.
How do you expect Beijing to react to your victory?
They should have a serious thought about the people's expectation as expressed by the election result. And this is a very strong message from the people of Taiwan. That is, you know, they don't like the idea of being threatened all the time. They don't like the idea of being undermined all the time. And we're such a proud, we're such proud people, and we have success in every aspect of our lives. Like, we're a successful democracy. We have pretty decent economy. Yeah, we deserve respect from China.
You spoke after the result about your hope that there could be a return to dialogue. How do you begin? What can you offer Beijing that?
No, I made this comment yesterday. American leadership in the region, right? And what, you know, whether it be Freedom of Navigation Acts, you know, the United States pivot to the Pacific, and then further reinforced by the president's approach to, you know, to tariffs with the Chinese and bringing the Chinese to the table, hopefully to treat the United States manufacturers in a more equitable way. I said yesterday, I believe that has emboldened other nations to say, hey, look, the United States is doing it. We could do it, right? And so it's interesting.
Might, in your view, open that door a little?
I think it's for the Chinese to sit down and think and also have this preparedness to face the reality. And that is the key. If they are not prepared to face the reality, whatever we offer won't be satisfying to them.
All right. And I think that's important, right? So ask that question. And the answer you get is this. Until the Chinese are willing to accept Taiwan as it is, as a free nation, right, it's not, nothing will change. It will just be a different version of that farce. Now, I want to play Chris Woodbridge coming on in about 20 minutes. We'll take a break right at the top of the hour. So I want to play a report from Al Jazeera. And it's about how the protests, right, and the demonstrations after the Soleimani, you know, killing hit, if you will, right, morphed into, right, something against the Iranian regime. And this is called
Richard Gisbert, and you're at the Listening Post. Here are some of the media stories.
This is a program called the Listening Post on Al Jazeera. And so I want to play, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 minutes of this. And, you know, it's really interesting. And you get some sense from the report of how fed up the Iranian people are, right, with the constant lies, the failing economy. So it's pretty interesting.
That we're covering this week. Iran, the showdown with the U.S., and how the accidental downing of a passenger aircraft has changed the narrative there. Portugal and racism, the country's news media, and their discourse of denial.
The global warming hysteria.
In Australia, the Murdoch Empire is taking some heat for its coverage of the wildfires there, and the practical joke a foreign correspondent fell for a worthy cause.
We've been told that this is quite a dangerous bear that's been known to attack people. It's called a drop bear.
Consider what it must be like to be in charge of communications for the Iranian government right now, or what it's like to be Iranian trying to sort fact from political fiction. 2 weeks ago, an American drone strike killed the country's most important military figure, General Qassem Soleimani. That provided Tehran with an opening, a chance to rewrite the political narrative, to steer Iranians away from protesting over an oppressive government and the state of their economy, to rally them to back their Islamic leaders against the Americans. And for a few days, that seemed to be working. Then that passenger plane was shot down over Tehran, and Iran's leaders had a decision to make. For 3 days, they chose to lie to the public before finally coming clean, admitting that they took that plane down by mistake. Iranians have since taken to the streets, not to mourn the loss of a fallen soldier, but because they are outraged over years of official lies, ineptitude, and impunity. That messaging opportunity is long gone. The Iranian government now has a PR nightmare on its hands. Our starting point this week is Tehran.
The truth has many enemies in Iran.
We didn't know until Friday afternoon.
Trying to hide the truth has a lot of foot soldiers.
Mechanical failure is announced as the reason for the plane crash. This is the Iranian state news agency. I'm just reading subtitle.
When the state misleads the public, the state media reflects the same thing.
The American media have made the ridiculous claim with no evidence.
It's another nail in the coffin of public trust in the state media.
Every once in a while, a story comes along that exposes the facade and then destroys it. First, the Iranian government denied its forces had shot down the airliner. The domestic media swallowed that narrative, failed to question it, and pointed the finger elsewhere.
As I said before, this is an accident and cannot be a missile attack.
Pilots and other experts who were on message were paraded in front of the cameras.
If a missile hits a plane, the plane must explode.
And when they finally admitted they had accidentally taken 176 lives, the government was apologetic but seemingly unashamed of the deceptions it had peddled.
Our military forces were brave enough to claim responsibility early on.
Zara Hotamira, the host of a daytime program at the state-owned IRIB, was ashamed of her part in the misinformation process. After more than a decade in the job, she resigned.
When things go on the highest security level in Iran, they tell journalists what you can say and what you can't say. But IRIB, the state broadcaster, is a different level because if you want to actually get to the level of being a news reader of the state TV, you've really passed enough ideological tests that you don't need convincing to lie. I have a long history with IRIB. Both my parents grew up working for the IRIB. I have a lot of affection for this institution, but it's been really rotten beyond recognition.
I think all of this is encapsulated very well by
Sanam Chantlay, senior journalist, France 24, which is a news program out of France.
A statement, a very strong statement by the Tehran-based Journalism Association, who said that today we're mourning the loss, the funeral of public trust.
People like Zahra Khatemirad, the athletes who are leaving Iran's national teams, or the artists who've boycotted festivals, all of them are signaling a social withdrawal that we've never seen before. Zahra Khatemirad is the daughter of a war veteran. Now there are people attacking and insulting her. And she's asking, how was I a good person before I resigned, and suddenly I'm a bad person?
Now again, this is the woman who was a news presenter and resigned because she says, I can't do this anymore.
This, in my view, is what the regime supporters have no answer for.
Iran's media landscape is restricted. Television is the government's domain. It either owns the channels or controls them through other means. Critical journalism, sprinkled with dissent, is limited to print and online. Facebook and Twitter were key organizing and dissemination platforms during the protests in 2009. Facebook has since been banned. These days, Instagram is where it's at. But one of the byproducts of so much media control is that when the time comes to face the cameras and deliver a message, people like the Supreme Leader or Hossein Soleimani, the head of the Revolutionary Guards, aren't very good at it.
I wish I had been on that plane to burn and die with them, but not to witness this sad accident. And this is the dude that's the head of the IRGC, the Republican Guards.
There is no culture of accountability. Mr. Soleimani is the head of one of the most powerful institutions in Iran. How many interviews has he given before? The guards run about 30-40% of the Iranian economy.
Did you hear that? The guards run 30-40% of the Iranian economy.
They run massive media outlets, and yet they've never been responsible to the people or to the constitution, by the way, or to anything.
The cover-up was probably more unacceptable to the Iranian people than the unintentional shoot-down of the plane. And I think the media also struggled very hard how to frame this. They were between a rock and a hard place if they wanted to really investigate.
This guy's name is Ali Baez, director at the Iran Project, international crisis group that monitors the media there.
The issue, they were worried that they might endanger national security. And if they were just parroting what the government was saying, they risk losing credibility.
Iranians are well-versed at scouring the web and social media for independent journalism, the kind that can land reporters in prison. 12 have been arrested over the past 2 months for coverage of anti-government economic protests. And Instagram, which for some reason the government has not blocked, has become the platform of choice.
I actually don't know why it's not blocked. I can't answer that. But I can tell you about why Instagram is so popular. It allows Iranians to sort of show their normal lives in the way that other social media platforms don't do. And since, you know, so much of day-to-day life is always censored and hidden in Iran, now it's used for everything. People don't even bother posting it anywhere else. Not.
Political people are starting to use this platform, which is mostly designed for photos and videos, for writing and sharing political statements, as well as a lot of political videos. The polarized and fragmented social space in Iran is also reflected on Instagram. From religious videos to nude photography, the whole spectrum is represented. The segmented reality of society is mirrored visually and verbally.
On this story, Twitter is the place to go for conspiracy theories, which thrive in countries where information is lacking or where misinformation rules. Some have posted that the plane was actually blown up from the inside by a passenger as part of a Swedish Zionist plot. The passenger they named turned out to be 9 years old. Others have posted links to pro-government newspapers saying that the American government and Boeing had conspired to bring the 737 down. The other thing this story has produced has been occasional signs of life in the Iranian mainstream media, news outlets that usually do what they're told, being far more critical of their political masters than they would normally dare to be.
There was a quasi-backlash, if you can call it that. The editor-in-chief of state-owned media, Tasnim, actually took to Twitter to say that Iranian authorities should have been more transparent with the information that they provided.
Tasnim and other news agencies found themselves in a very difficult situation. For 3 days, they wrote that the claim the Ukrainian flight was shot down by Iranian missiles was the enemy's psychological warfare. But when the truth was revealed, they were shocked. They decided to project this shock onto the government. They felt they'd been tricked into this. They are one of the players, but felt left out of the game.
For a government addicted to controlling the media, now paying the price for its clumsy propaganda, these are desperate times.
Now, this is the Ayatollah Khomeini, who hadn't spoken publicly in a long time. These American clowns who falsely and despicably say, we are standing with the Iranian people.
میگن که ما در کنار مردم ایرانیم.
This past Friday, the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei chose to deliver a sermon in public for the first time in 8 years.
Think about that. The first time in 8 years. So if you want some barometer of the level of concern internally with this, right? Hey, we have to tell him that he's got to speak. Or he looks around and says, hey, boys and girls, not girls because they don't speak to women like that. Hey, everybody, I'm going to have to speak this week, right? Everybody got the memo? See ya.
But consider what Iran is up against on the propaganda front. 12 days after the Pentagon killed General Qassem Soleimani, the U.S. State Department released this video, an unsubtle message to Iranians.
It shows video of Iranian women in Western clothing. The first subtitle was, Iran was a place of peace, a place of joy, right? Women smiling and laughing and clapping.
A nostalgic view of regimes gone by, the days of the Shah. A regime that so many Iranians feared and hated. An era reimagined according to American interests.
The video goes on to say a land of unlimited potential. But again, it's what, you know, we've come to understand that the overthrow of the Shah, right, the average Iranian was believed that the Shah had stole the election in the 50s. And so to see the Shah go after what they viewed was his abuse of power was not something that the average Iranian, you know, opposed. Mrs. Smith taught us that. Right. So it's kind of interesting. So you see the State Department stepping in it. Nice going, boys and girls.
In Tehran, desperate times call for desperate messaging. But this time on the story of Flight 752 and how to tell it, the Iranian authorities got it wrong. We're discussing other media stories that are on our radar this week with one of our producers, Johanna Hoos. Joe, what's this about trouble in the Murdoch household?
We don't need to know about the Murdoch household. Anyway, I thought that was very, you know, again, you get a different perspective. Obviously, Al Jazeera has its own view of the planet. And so I love to, like, turn the map around and look at the news from that perspective. The only news item that I will share with you today is to congratulate the Semper Fi Fund. And the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the former commandant of the Marine Corps, Joe Dunford, has signed on to become the chief executive officer of the Semper Fi Fund. That is no small deal. So congratulations to the everybody at the Semper Fi Fund who did great things, you know, during the war and have now become, I mean, one of the most trusted fundraisers, one of the most trusted nonprofits, that they do good things all the time. And so, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joe Dunford, headed to be the CEO at Semper Fi Fund. So congratulations to them. We will take a break right now. When we come back, Chris Woodbridge going to join us here on a Wednesday, I'll remember. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.